Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Well, here we are again. It's the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. You got to love that excitement in my voice, right, John? The Bengals are 5-7 now. We're right in the middle of a 1-6 stretch, and it's Cincinnati Bengals football at its best or worst. I'm Anthony Cazenza, joined with John Sheeran. John, how you doing? I don't know. How are you feeling after that one that we witnessed this last week?
It's predictable at this point. I think a lot of our all of our concerns that we had at the beginning of the season are just materializing right in front of our eyes. And you know, it's at some point you got to think stuff like this is like cyclical, just in the season. But at this point, I don't know, man. It's just rough to keep watching the same thing over and over, and it's literally just the same game every week after week. And unfortunately, somehow we're still here, and we're still trying to talk about what they can do to salvage this season. But at this point, damn, that was really morbid.
Yeah. A lot of
that's where I'm at.
Yeah. A lot of on tap tonight. We've got a question of the night that we put out on Twitter. It's about head coaching options. I know it may seem a little far-fetched at this point to talk about Marvin Lewis potentially being gone, but we'll talk about that, about some head coaching options. And as I mentioned to my co-host on the terrible thing about Twitter and polls that you put out there, you only give four options, and there are a number of options that seem pretty interesting. NFL coaching ranks, both currently unemployed, at the college ranks, there's a lot of different people out there that could interest the Bengals if they let Marvin Lewis go after this season. Interesting four games coming up, at least from a head coaching standpoint and a staff standpoint for 2019. I mean, theoretically, if the Bengals went out, they could be 9-7 and sniff the playoffs. But by the way they're playing, that doesn't even seem anywhere close to a realistic possibility. And John, you kind of said same thing every week. Yes and no. I mean, same result, but it comes in just different ways, right? I mean, it's like now it's backup players. It's more injuries. We'll get to that in just a second. I wanted to start, and we will take calls, texts, emails, tweets, all that kind of the live YouTube chat. If you want to leave questions, we're going to get to questions at the end of the show. I wanted to get to this. This was a caller that actually called last week, John. Hopefully I can get this audio on the program here. But caller from last week, it was Robert. And Robert's a longtime fan. Unfortunately, we couldn't get to Robert's call last week because we had a number of different calls and just a really busy, really busy show last week. But I wanted to get to this voicemail. I thought it was very interesting. Let's cue it up here and hopefully we can... there we go.
I'm 66 years old. I've been watching them for 1,000 years, man. And, love them to death, but I'm just so sick of them. I don't know what to do. I mean, just sick of them. You know, we're the laughing stock of the NFL. Nobody believes in us. And there's reason for that. Marvin Lewis, you know, in the past he's done well.
That was from Robert, a listener of the program and longtime Bengals fan. And, you know, I don't normally like to play voicemails and all that kind of stuff on the air, but that one really resonated with me, and that one showed a lot of passion, a lot of anger. And the reason I play that is because, John, I think you and I can relate. And to be honest with you, as I mentioned, this voicemail was sent before this loss against the Broncos. So
he knew it was coming.
Yeah. I mean, add another loss to that, and all of a sudden, you know, there's probably some more there. Thank you for the voicemail there. Very passionate. But, you know, I think that the comments there resonate and the criticisms resonate. And we'll talk about what happened on Sunday in just a second, John. You put up a post on CincyJungle.com that I think kind of plays into this voicemail a little bit about Andrew Whitworth being lowballed when he was hitting free agency. You know, that along with the indoor practice facility, along with some of the other criticisms of what was brought up in that voicemail there, when the Bengals start losing, all of a sudden it's really easy to point to some of these shortcomings as a franchise, whereas when they're winning, they're getting 10, 11 wins a year, as they did in through 2011 and through 2015. You know, you kind of put that stuff aside. Now it's pretty easy to point that stuff out, right?
Yeah, and I think that is a testament to how powerful and impactful actual talent is and good assistant coaching is. When the Bengals don't have either, which is pretty much the case right now, things kind of fall apart because, as Robert so eloquently explained in his voicemail, the expectations are just different for the Cincinnati Bengals compared to any other team in the NFL, because when you just look at the basic facts and how they're operated and how they're run, they're just not in the same atmosphere, the stratosphere, as some of the best teams in the NFL, and just their overall philosophies and just their overall way of running things. So when the Bengals, you know, have 15 guys on injured reserve, their depth is completely depleted, and they don't have the proper depth in the first place to handle those kinds of injuries, things just fall apart because they have an average head coach. Right now, they don't have good assistants that they can rely on like Marvin Lewis has in the past. And just these same weaknesses get exploited week in and week out because they just don't have an answer to it. Because they're just, because I think as Robert was kind of alluding to, there's just a certain level that we've come to expect with the Bengals because of just the way that they are. And when things go bad, they get tumultuously worse because they don't have that base just from an organizational standpoint to kind of stand upon and kind of regather themselves in these crisis situations. And then things kind of snowball just like what they're doing right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point about what you said with the quality assistance and at times Marvin Lewis, and it is to his credit, as Robert mentioned in the voicemail there, it is sometimes to his credit, but it's also to the credit of gathering some good assistant coaches as well. There are times where Marvin Lewis has been able to mask this stuff, the supposed cheap approach in free agency and just in general with the team, the lack of an indoor facility, the basic cutting of corners that this team has shown that other teams don't. And he's been able to mask that stuff in the form of division crowns and all that kind of stuff. So you got to give him some credit, but there are times when the Bengals kind of, after they taste some success, they kind of stumble onto their own two feet, if you will. And now you see the results that we've been seeing, not only in 2018, but all the way back now to 2016. The Bengals are staring their third straight losing season in the face. And there's a lot of change and upheaval that needs to be had. And who knows? We've talked about this on the show before, John. I mean, I don't even know if we can trust the franchise and who's in control to make those wide sweeping changes. And to me, if I'm ownership, I just don't understand how you can accept the cutting of corners and accept because it is a business, being less than wanting to be the best or one of the best in your respective field.
This is going to be a breaking point, or not a breaking point, but just a very interesting point in time for us, just as just football fans in general, to observe how they sell this team in the offseason. If they bring back the majority of the same staff, majority of the same players that have been a part of this three-year failure following the 2015 playoff loss, I don't know how they're going to be able to sell it to the fan base to keep those season tickets rolling in, but it's going to have to be some masterful craftsmanship and marketing strategy from this team. And I think it's been impressive how they've been able to manipulate this fan base into keep believing in that this same strategy is going to work year after year, and ends up not doing it. They come out with a new catchphrase and put it on a shirt. Marvin Lewis utters it in a press conference. Bam, we got the optimism again. I just feel like this is kind of the year. If they don't do anything to kind of shift away from what they're doing, it's going to be a near impossible task to bring that optimism. And I think we're going to see, if nothing happens, a similar lack of fan support and attendance that we saw from the beginning of that 2011 season after the whole 2010 debacle and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, they're not going to have the youth and rejuvenated, refreshed revival of that roster that we saw in 2011. We're going to see the same retread, veterans and old faces, and probably not a very lucrative free agency class in the process. So how they sell it, if they don't change anything, it's going to have to be an act of God if they're going to be able to fill that stadium at the beginning of the season, if they don't do anything about it.
Yeah, and if they do not change anything, coaching staff or approach or both, I mean, they're obviously going to point to the injuries. I think that's what's going to take place. And we'll talk about a major injury and some news on that front a little bit later in the show. We do have a question of the night that we'll get to in just a second, but if you want to vote on it on Twitter at BengalsOBI or comment on it either on CincyJungle.com in the comment thread or in our live YouTube chat, you could do that. Basically, the question of the week or the question of this episode, coaching options that intrigues you the most if the Bengals part ways with Marvin Lewis. And again, I can't emphasize enough, big if. There's Josh McDaniels, there's Bruce Arians, there's Mike McCarthy, there's Eric Bieniemy, there is Urban Meyer, there is, a bunch of guys at the college ranks you could look at. Other retreads in the NFL. John and I will give a couple of our choices here in just a little bit, but if you want to sound off on that or vote on that on Twitter, you are welcome to do so. The reason why I brought up Robert's voicemail and kind of what we kicked off this show with, John, is basically these decisions, these types of things with Andrew Whitworth, them lowballing them, and if you have no idea what we're talking about, go read John's article on CincyJungle.com. Whitworth kind of made some eye-opening comments on a Rams podcast lately. Basically, this points to what we saw in terms of the team they fielded on Sunday against the Broncos, right? They had a handful of winning seasons, and they got supremely confident in what they were doing and how they were building their team. And they have since whiffed on a number of different picks, high picks. And you saw that, unfortunately, on the offensive line mostly this week. They thought they were grooming a really athletic, high-end quarterback in Jeff Driscoll. Driscoll made a couple of nice throws. And, he was put in some awful positions based on offensive line play and other things happening. But let's be honest, what he showed us was that's not NFL starter material. So I think that's the major takeaway on my front, at least this week, John. Your takeaway on Driscoll, you also wrote a really good post, I thought, on was it Billy Price? This or it was kind of the weekly lineman, I think you did, right?
It was the rookie, yeah.
Yeah. And Price had a bad day. And we look to – I mentioned first-round picks, high picks. Jake Fisher on IR. It's gotten so bad with Cedric Ogbuehi, who is a backup tackle, that not only did the Bengals sign Andre Smith last week, but they moved Clint Bowling over from guard to left tackle. He struggled at left tackle, predictably. Ogbuehi's on the bench. Disaster all around. Your takeaways, I guess, if there are too much that we haven't already addressed, John.
I feel like at the beginning of the game, they tried their hardest to mask the lack of cohesion on that offensive line by having a lot of play action rollouts for Driscoll to try to limit the amount of true pass protection reps from that offensive line with a lot of those guys playing out of position. And at the first part, you know, Driscoll wasn't being asked to push the ball down the field, a very conservative approach from Bill Lazor in terms of offensive play calling. And again, like we saw, you know, a lack of consistently using Mixon just not only as a runner, but as a weapon. I think he only had 14 touches and two of them were catches. They used Giovanni Bernard out of the backfield a decent amount. But again, when you had AJ Green go down in the beginning of the second quarter, you know, you had, you know, a couple or a handful of targets go to Boyd. But again, you know, the offense kind of, you know, threw their hands up and asked, what did we do? And they didn't really have an answer for that. Once the game started swaying towards the Broncos' favor, once their Bengals' defense didn't exactly, you know, the Bengals' defense didn't exactly keep up their pace. You know, Philip Lindsay kind of ran all over them towards the end. Then you had Driscoll push the ball down the field, and you kind of saw what I think a lot of us expected. You know, you had those handful of throws to Boyd over the middle where he kind of settled into the pocket, you know, didn't get fazed much by the pressure in front of his face and made a good throw. But at the same time, for every one of those throws, there was a head scratcher throw where he like tripped up, you know, rolling out of play action. He had that awful overthrow that led to an interception and a few more turnover worthy throws as well. So it was about what we should have expected from Driscoll, you know, some good plays, but, you know, masked and countered by some awful plays in the process and just a general offensive scheme that clearly didn't trust him to make, you know, those multi-read type of progressions and throws. And, you know, just in general, if you're gonna game plan for that as your quarterback against a very solid defense in the Broncos, it's not exactly a recipe for winning. And I think, you know, we've talked about it so many times when this offense is dealing with adversity, they just shy away from Mixon for whatever reason. And that was just another case for this week. And until we see it not happen, I think we just got to expect that it's going to happen every single week. And that's just the nature of a Bill Lazor offense.
Yeah, I think Mixon ended 12 for 82 in terms of rushing. A number of nice runs, and for some reason you got your backup quarterback in, you've got backup offensive linemen in, and you're shuffling things around. You kind of figure, why don't we really try and use the run game? That didn't happen. You had the offensive line again. I don't want to sit here and say Jeff Driscoll played awful because he really did not. The team put him in a lot of precarious positions, both in not running the football, and I think the Bengals hit a nice dozen penalties on the day, a lot of which were on the offensive line and in the form of false starts and holds and all that kind of stuff. That puts him in a bad position. They needed almost everything to go right this week in order to come out with a win and put Jeff Driscoll in a comfortable position, and they did not do that, which is unfortunate. And, you know, there were also a number of key drops by receivers that would have resulted in first downs that had either killed drives or resulted in turnovers or what have you. So there was just stuff that those are kind of my takeaways. There were mistakes that affected your backup quarterback. There was, as you mentioned, questionable play calling that affected the backup quarterback who was forced to start. So that didn't help. And then, you know, just not only this week, but last week, you know, I think the Bengals combined for 25 penalties the past 2 weeks at home. That's inexcusable. And Marvin Lewis put out he said something to Jeff Hobson or the media saying, you know, it's young guys. Well, I mean, some of them are inexperienced, if that's what you meant by quote unquote young, but a lot of them are made by veteran guys, and they're just dumb penalties. And getting false starts and those kinds of procedure penalties at home, to me, that's mental and that's inexcusable. That's just
you definitely drop like an RKO on Marvin Lewis with that one tweet.
I thought so. elbow from the top rope, right? That was kind of my takeaway there. Just kind of continuing a little bit on Driscoll, for you, John, does this solidify basically, because Lewis before the game, I think he said he made some sort of comment that every team is looking for an Andy Dalton. They are always in search of an Andy Dalton, and that is, you know, go around the league and talk to GMs. Hey, these aren't my words, folks. Just to clarify, these are Marvin Lewis's words. And I think to a degree that is correct. I think teams are looking for a capable quarterback, a guy that can start and win games for you, which Andy Dalton has proven to do. But does this game and Driscoll's performance, does that kind of say, you know what, maybe we've been a little too hard on Andy? Or does all of it, including Dalton's injury, Dalton's lapses in big games, and the shortcomings we discussed about this franchise, does that point to you got to just luck into a transcendent talent at that position at this point?
Well, that is the nature of the NFL right now. Like,
right.
You have teams sacrificing all their assets to move up in the draft to get that next big thing at quarterback. We've seen in the past handful of drafts now. But I hear that every team is looking for an Andy Dalton. What I think about who Andy Dalton is as a quarterback, a very average one, plays well in structure, doesn't let the, doesn't exactly collapse at this point in his career, but doesn't exactly elevate your team. He's able to kind of come into the game and just, you know, operate the scheme that's bestowed upon him and just keep the team in the game, but not exactly take them over to the top of where they need to be. If that's what he was trying to say, then that kind of sounds like a backup quarterback to me personally, or just a quote unquote game manager, which is the most outdated terms in the history of football right now. Jeff Driscoll is like we talked about it last week. You know, he's not that cut from that same kind of cloth. He's going to take more risks. He's going to play more out of structure. And as a result, he's going to play with more variance. That's exactly what we saw against the solid Denver Broncos team. And yeah, I think that, you know, injecting Driscoll into an offense where Andy Dalton could succeed, presumably with health, would net them some different results in different kind of areas in this offense, which is completely battered beyond belief at this point. You know, Driscoll was obviously going to have some rough patches in the process. He was going to shine that, you know, that raw arm talent athleticism, but not to the extent where it would take them over the top to beat a team that they were clearly worse than in the Denver Broncos. And like you said, they needed everything to go right. They needed Driscoll to play out of his mind, and he played exactly how we expected him to play, and the result was exactly what we expected it to be.
Yeah, I think just – and that's what Marvin Lewis and I guess even, you know, Carson Palmer tried to do when they first both came in hand to this franchise. It was outside guy from a head coaching perspective, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, you know, the best guy in the draft. Let's see if we can win games and get past the hurdles that Mike Brown places in front of us from an organizational standpoint. And, you know, potentially as you win games and things change and all that kind of stuff, you can potentially start swaying the owner, which I think Marvin Lewis did a little bit of, but it's still not where it needs to be. But Bengals lose to the Broncos 24-10, just a pretty ugly game all around in terms of penalties and guys who were forced into different roles and extended playing time. It just was not the kind of product that we should have been forced to witness, I guess, is probably the nicer way to put it. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. You can get this show on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Art19, and on CincyJungle.com. We appreciate you joining us on a different evening this week, and thanks to you as well, John. This was in part of my schedule, so we had to record on a different night. But I appreciate both John and the listeners accommodating. But please download the show how and where you can. We're going to get to our question of the night in just a few minutes. Again, if you're just joining us live, the question of the night or the question of the week is some head coaching candidates that could intrigue you if Marvin Lewis is going to be let go of his job. We don't know for sure if that's going to be the case, but some signs are pointing to that being the case. We'll see. With this franchise, you never know. But there are a number of different coaches out there at the college ranks and in the pros that could come in here and potentially make a difference for the Bengals. So we'll get to that in just a second. Just to kind of close the book a little bit on what transpired last week and bridging that topic into things going forward in 2019 and beyond. You mentioned AJ Green, obviously re-aggravated that toe injury. He now has to have surgery, torn ligaments in the toe, should be ready in the spring to go for workouts and all of that stuff. I think all of us are still pretty confident in the fact that even though he would now be entering his ninth season next year and has had a couple of injuries the past couple of seasons after being so durable, AJ Green, now you know entering his ninth year, coming off of toe surgery, he's there for Cincinnati. And then behind him, John Ross, he's been up and down, and I think that's being generous. Tyler Boyd's had a breakout year, but he will be entering the final year of his deal next year. You have Cody Kaur, who dropped another, I think, at least one, if not two passes last week. He did have the touchdown catch, which was nice to see from him, but the Bengals refused to play Auden Tate. Alex Erickson doesn't really give you much in terms of an offensive threat. So where I'm going with this, John, is what's ahead for this group next year and in the coming years? I mean, is this something yet again, even though there's a top five pick, a top 10 pick, and a second round pick as your potentially your top three receivers, is this a position that needs to be addressed again this next offseason?
Potentially, but nothing more from what I'm thinking right now, nothing more than like a third or fourth round pick.
Right.
I think that if these groups of receivers were to be given a quarterback that could enhance their talents to a certain degree, we would see some slightly better production. And I think obviously the gap between establishing that chemistry that they already have with Dalton to a new quarterback would then take some time, and maybe we could see some development in some of the younger guys in that sense. But I think in today's NFL, you got to get the quarterback right, and then the receivers, as long as they have some raw talent with them, they'll kind of follow suit. And I think that they have some of that, at least a good amount of that raw talent already on the roster. They could do with one more, sure, to push, you know, Kaur off the roster or just keep six with Auden Tate there. But AJ Green leading it, you know, always assuming that he's healthy, always assuming he's going to be ready to play. Tyler Boyd is your two, John Ross is your three, going in at least into 2019. I think that's a good enough core for at least an above average quarterback to take advantage of. And obviously Dalton is almost with 100% certainty going to start there for 2019. So we should just probably just clear that up. We should probably just clear that up right now. But I think with them all healthy, I think it should be enough. But at some point you got to say, you know, it's going to be now or never for Malone into next year. They're probably going to want to get Boyd under contract. And obviously, we wouldn't want Kaur to be on the roster for next year either. So I think just maybe one or two more guys with like a mid-round pick with some upside, I think that would be enough to kind of solidify it. But I think there is still, you know, malleable talent there to work with. And I think if they were given a better quarterback, we wouldn't be kind of as rough on them as we kind of are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I was not advocating if the Bengals do end up with a top 10, top 15 pick this year.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not advocating for that. But you look at it, and all of a sudden, you know, a position group we were very excited about coming into this year, Green, Boyd, Ross, you know, there's more question marks now than there were a couple of months ago. Now there's also a bigger exclamation point in Boyd because he has surpassed expectations, I think, by most people. But you know, I think there's a lot of work to be done. I have been very disappointed in Josh Malone. I thought that was a guy that would really take a nice step this year, even as a number four guy or what have you. But he's been hurt. He hasn't been used, and you know, he's one of those height, weight, speed guys, and just is not, he's still got a little time, but that's a guy that I was hoping was going to take a nice step this year and really has not shown very much. But, you know, I don't want to say an overhaul is due there. I mean, Alex Erickson brings value as a special teamer. He had a critical fumble last week, which basically turned the entire tide of the game, but that's a rarity. And he just isn't bringing much on offense. John Ross, I think he's, you know, still under 20 catches at this point in the season. So he's grabbed the touchdowns, but I don't know. I just I think I agree with you to a certain extent about the quarterback, but that's a position that I feel that they should be getting more out of, with or without AJ Green in the lineup. There's still some heavy investments in that position group, and they're not stepping up, which is not fun to see. And hopefully AJ Green comes back to spearhead that group. We all expect he will. He's bounced back well from injuries that he's sustained. Luckily none of them have been of the knee ilk, but he's bounced back, and he is a superstar player. It's just unfortunate he's had a couple of seasons recently cut short when the team has needed him, and nothing really he could do about that. And the last time when he played, and it was a lot when he played a full game last time. The last time he did that, it was the last time the Bengals won a game against Tampa Bay, and he injured himself at the end of that game, which, as we all know, the Bengals had a big lead, let it go, and they were forced to drive down the field at the end of the game, and that's when he hurt himself. So, kind of the microcosm of 2018, if you will. We're going to start taking your questions in just a little bit, so give us a call or a text, 949-542-6241. You can get in touch with us, or you can get in touch with us in the live YouTube chat. So hit us up with your questions or comments there, as well as on Twitter at BengalsOBI. We do have a poll up for the question of the week, so definitely want to hear from you on that. And it's our turn to talk about that, John. The Bengals are at a crossroads with Marvin Lewis, as we all know. And a report surfaced Sunday that it turns out that the second year of his contract is actually an option year that the team can exercise not to have him back if they so choose. We thought it was just kind of a standard 2-year deal, but does not appear to be the case. And now, like he was last year, Marvin Lewis might be fighting for his job, and who knows if, a couple of late season wins will save him. But there is a chance that he could not be the team's coach next year. This was kind of a critical year for the team, and it started off great, and it has subsequently blown up in everybody's faces. So I'm going to ask you this. There are a number of head coaching options out there that could be intriguing. Some are retread guys that had some success and then, got fired after a couple of poor seasons or retired. There are some college coaches that are unproven at the NFL level. So give me one pro name, and that could be someone who either fizzled out as a head coach elsewhere or is looking to be a first-time head coach that in the NFL ranks. And give me one college guy that you are thinking of that could be good fits for the Bengals.
So the two names that I would name obviously wouldn't be likely candidates for the Bengals, because I think it goes against what they would look for in a new face of the franchise. And for the NFL, I think all over the league in the next handful of years, we're going to see teams try their best to find the next Sean McVay. And that's going to lead to potentially some bad hires, because they're kind of overvaluing, someone who might be, under 40 years old, has done a lot with, whatever offensive talent that he's been given. And it could lead to some bad hires. But I feel like the Bengals are in that position that they have to take that risk. I don't think it's a risk that they're going to take. But a guy like Eric Bieniemy, who I think a lot of fans have talked about, the offense coordinator for the Chiefs, a technical disciple of the Andy Reid system, I think he's about as best as we could possibly expect, because he has that connection with the organization, because he did. He was a part of it so many years ago, has worked his way up to an offensive coordinator, and one of the very best offenses in the NFL has been a part of elevating the talent that is Patrick Mahomes. I think that, him knowing what he can work with in terms of scheme, in terms of talent, giving him full reins of just building the offense into the next century at this point, it's kind of like that best chance to go. And it's like the exact opposite of what you would get in like a Mike McCarthy, who is a former head coach and, has a very outdated offense. And I think that's kind of the synopsis of, what they need to do. They don't need someone who has been a head coach and has recently, you know, fizzled out or failed in whatever resort. They need someone fresh. They need someone who's looking for the next opportunity. And when you look at the college game, you know, you have all sorts of guys who, at this point, you know, if you're a college head coach and you get inquired about coaching the Cincinnati Bengals, it's like a question of, why would I give up all this power and all this authority as a coach, a recruiter, and such an influential part of an esteemed university to go and coach and be an employee under Mike Brown? It would be extremely unlikely that any, you know, high profile college head coach or offensive coordinator would take that risk. But if I would want it to be anybody, I think right now it would be Lincoln Riley, who not only, you know, got the very best of the Baker Mayfield of Oklahoma, but now has gotten a future baseball player, Kyler Murray, to perform as, like, probably the next Heisman. It's very likely that Oklahoma is going to have back-to-back Heisman-winning quarterbacks, and I think, obviously, Lincoln Riley has a substantial part of that, you know, torching Big 12 defenses, like, no, we haven't seen in the past, you know, decade, even though the Big 12 isn't much of a defensive juggernaut. But I think that he's kind of that same, you know, type of prototype that the NFL is going to be looking for and try to emulate what the Rams are doing. And I think at this point, he would be my favorite option out of the college ranks. Now that Cliff Kingsbury is with your team, USC, now that that's official, he's off the books. I think Lincoln Riley is going to be the next guy for me.
Yeah, I saw someone in the YouTube chat. Let me see who it was. Kentucky Ron said Cliff Kingsbury. He's not, like you said, he's not going to he's going to SC. So, you know, and that's a good hire for SC, especially as
I'll be Urban Meyer's offensive coordinator in 2020.
What's that?
For you. He'll be Urban Meyer's offensive coordinator in 2020.
and a lot of people who probably listen to this podcast are Urban Meyer guys, are Ohio State guys, and that's part of what prompted us to ask this question, is because, you know, that Ohio State apparently found its replacement and Urban Meyer is retiring from Ohio State after this year. But we've seen Urban Meyer walk away from football when he was with the University of Florida, and he came back to Ohio State. So you never know, he could come back. So you said college rank Lincoln Riley and pro rank Eric Bieniemy, correct? Okay. Eric Bieniemy, for those who don't know, actually played for the Bengals. So there's a connection there. He played for them for four seasons from 1995 to 1998. And, you know, those are the glory years of Bengals football, by the way. he was also given one of the best nicknames ever by Chris Berman of ESPN, Eric Sleeping with Bieniemy. I thought that was a great one. But intelligent guy, very creative, obviously, from what he's done with the Kansas City Chiefs. So I think that Eric Bieniemy would make a lot of sense, and he knows the Bengals. He knows Mike Brown. I think that that in itself makes quite a bit of sense. I think you bring up a valid point, John, about a potential issue with, you know, what coaches would want to maybe come to Cincinnati. But I think that Bieniemy, knowing the Cincinnati culture, maybe that's a deterrent, but knowing the Cincinnati culture, knowing Mike Brown, being a former Bengals player, you know, I think he could be a guy that, you know, they look at and he cuts his teeth as a first-time head coach, maybe with the Bengals. We'll see. There's a couple guys I look at. I guess from the, you know, we talk about Josh McDaniels, you know, the Patriots coaching tree. I'm not really a big fan of that. I think that that's, you know, the whole system thing. I think that that's, there's a little bit of an overrated aspect there. I will say I'm intrigued by Bruce Arians, believe it or not. I think he has experience with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, he was an offensive coordinator there and had, you know, had some success there. Took over for Chuck Pagano and had a great run as a coach there. Had some great seasons with the Arizona Cardinals, with Carson Palmer. So there's a lot of connections that just kind of makes sense to me. And apparently, and if anything, it'll get him out of the booth, because if you've heard him announce, no offense, Bruce, I'm sure I couldn't do any better, but I think that he probably is chomping at the bit to come back at the right opportunity. If the Bengals come back with some healthy players, he may look at, you know, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, maybe even Andy Dalton, AJ Green. He could look at that and say, you know, the core is there. Let's tweak some things, bring in some of my guys, and, you know, go from there. I like the idea. It's always about beating the Steelers in this division and in the playoffs, to me. So, if you've got a guy who's intimately familiar with that organization and what to do there, I'm on board with that. I realize Arians doesn't have some of the track records as a Super Bowl winner like McCarthy or, you know, even McDaniels as an assistant winning Super Bowls, but I like that. Another guy I really like, and I've said this before, and he doesn't get the run that a lot of guys in college get, is David Shaw of Stanford. I think he's extremely intelligent. He's carried the torch at Stanford from Jim Harbaugh, and they've been a very competitive team, unfortunately for some of those Ivy League-ish schools or those high academic schools like Stanford, like Notre Dame, you know, for periods of time, it's hard to get. I mean, these are, for the most part, the kids focus a lot on academics. That may not be the case at some other schools. Hate to say it, but it's the truth. And somehow he not only runs a really tight program, a team that consistently sniffs the Rose Bowl and Pac-12 champions. He seems to be a very sharp guy. If you watch him on the NFL Network during the draft, he's usually on that, and he has a good read on a lot of the players coming out. He's just a guy I have a lot of respect for, and he's not the most rah-rah guy. He's not the most yelly, in-your-face guy, but he's brought kind of – he's brought a couple of different approaches to Stanford football. One, there is some creativity where you can use guys like a Christian McCaffrey, and he was able to do that. But he's also done the ground-and-pound stuff, and he's gotten creative on defense with certain players. A lot of edge rusher guys that have entered the NFL. And, I think there's a lot there from David Shaw that could point to success in the NFL level. So those are two guys that I like. Do you have any thoughts about Shaw? I don't know if you follow him too much, John, based on region, but
No. I definitely know Shaw because, you know, watching him on the draft is a treat. And I think with at least for Shaw, I don't know about Arians, but, you know, regardless of what scheme they potentially run or how they, you know, build a roster, whatever, I think what's most important in this day and age, you know, for coaching the NFL is the adaptability in terms of just overall, you know, philosophy and just kind of how you just kind of manage things, whatever. And you have the most stubborn head coach in the history of the world, and Marvin Lewis, stuck in his ways and, you know, not deviating, and therefore progress has yet to be seen. And then you have guys like Frank Reich, who, you know, took over the Colts and just kind of, you know, kept an open mind about what they have there, and just, you know, saw what they needed, addressed those issues, you know, instantly, and just kind of built the whole team and the offense around what strengths and weaknesses that they had. And now the Colts are looking like, you know, they're ahead of whatever number of years rebuild that they were originally on. So if Shaw, or at least a first time NFL head coach, comes into a role like head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals with just this fresh and open mind and adaptability to kind of, you know, rework what the roster is now and take advantage of whatever talent that they have left, I think that's almost maybe the most crucial part of that, is that investment in the organization and in the talent that's already there, but has the, you know, the recognition to understand what they need to do differently and how they need to be so much different than the guy that they're replacing.
So our updated poll results, at least on Twitter, 22%, and again, I was only able to put up four options, and one of them is other. So 22% says Josh McDaniels, 33% said Bruce Arians, 22% said Mike McCarthy, 23% said other. So Arians is winning out, but not by a ton. And in the live YouTube chat, I'm looking. Zachary Stemple says, wouldn't mind Shaw. Anthony Hart says, we're going to have both Harbaughs in the AFC North. Well, I'd welcome Jim Harbaugh in Cincinnati, but I imagine Jim Harbaugh trying to get along with Mike Brown. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I'm not surprised at all about the lack of support of McCarthy, and I think a lot
of people... Yeah, I was going to go there. Go for it.
I think a lot of people were also turned off by the way McDaniels handled, accepting the Colts job and then hearing from the Patriots about, you know, how he's essentially the de facto Belichick replacement. So if McDaniels doesn't want to leave, you know, New England for, you know, the Colts and Andrew Luck, I just highly doubt he's going to want to leave for Cincinnati in a worst class organization than Andy Dalton. So that's basically not even an option at this point. And I think no one wants McCarthy at this point because I think they respect what he did in the past as a head coach and the success that he had, but has realized that over the past, you know, handful of years, he just hasn't evolved in the similar way that Marvin Lewis hasn't evolved, and eventually Packers got tired of it. And it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I don't think it'll be in a head coaching job, or at least here.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, McCarthy's got the Super Bowl, but, a lot of people point to, you know, Aaron Rodgers and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Keith Brewer says Arians already said he'd only come out of retirement to coach Cleveland. Interesting. I don't know if he specifically said that. He might have. I didn't catch that. And there was another comment here. I'm trying to see who it was from. Saying that. Gosh, where was it? It was basically saying that Arians is giving out Christmas gifts to everybody in the Cleveland front office to get that job. So I apologize. I can't see exactly who that was, but I thought that was a pretty funny comment. It's possible. He's got a number one overall pick as a quarterback and all that kind of stuff. There is young talent there, but I don't know. And at this point, that's an interesting question. I don't know what's a better job. I don't know if Cleveland's a better job or if Cincinnati's a better job. I really don't, especially given what we saw a couple weeks ago. Cleveland's been a constant train wreck, but Cincinnati's really trending downward. And, you've got the Mike Brown facet, so who knows. Give us your thoughts and comments. Even after we're done recording, we'd still love to hear from you about which head coach you are potentially interested in replacing Marvin Lewis. We hate to be shoving Marvin out of the door with the season not yet done, but
I'm all right with it.
Well, maybe we don't hate to, but it's worth discussing given some bits of news about Marvin and everything this week that we've seen. So pretty interesting stuff. There are some good names at the college level and the NFL level that should be available for the Bengals if they end up wanting to make a move. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I'm Anthony Cazenza. He's John Sheeran. You can get this show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Art19, YouTube, and CincyJungle.com. We're going to get to listener questions here now. You can give us a call or shoot us a text, 949-542-6241, 949-542-6241, or leave your questions in the live YouTube chat or on the comment thread on CincyJungle.com. We already do have a call on the line. It is Aaron, who is from Cincinnati. Aaron, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man.
What's on your mind tonight?
I'm a chocolate system.
What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, yeah. I got so much that I can't even probably get it all out. If I run a little long, just cut me off whenever you need
to. All right.
I wanted to comment on a couple things you guys were talking about as far as like quarterbacks go. One of the things that was like taking in my brain there was when we were talking about Marvin Lewis saying everybody wasn't Andy Dalton. I don't think anybody wants Andy Dalton for 8 years. Like, not for 8 years, like maybe for a couple of seasons, as John said, maybe as a backup. Nobody wants to look at Andy Dalton. Nobody thinks of him as the guy to build your franchise around. So that's just complete bunk. You know, I think he just throws that out there. In regards to the game on Sunday, I think that this, you know, with Jeff Driscoll, it won't ever work with this coaching agency because the way Jeff plays is a very, a high-risk, high-reward kind of deal, and you kind of got to keep chasing that dragon. You know what I'm saying? If he throws the pick on one drive, you got to keep letting him go back at it. And we're not that type of offense. It's, you know, you only get so many chances to do anything. And, I mean, but if you look at some of the other stats in the game, just watching it, versus when Andy's in there, we often go three and out. You know what I'm saying? There's not, there's not sustained drives at all. Whereas, almost until, I would say, it started to get out of hand around the third quarter, we were, comparable in, time of possession stats, which we normally always lose. We were competitive in yards. You know what I'm saying? And all those other little stats that nobody really pays attention to, they were close. It just didn't translate to the scoreboard because of, whatever reason, penalties, setting us back, and all that stuff. I really feel like if we didn't have such discombobulation on that offensive line that with all the penalties, we'd probably... We put up a much better fight. It's not win the game. That's just me. I might be out of mind, but whatever. And lastly, to touch on the coaching thing, I'm only going to get excited about a coach who I feel like will take more power from Mike Brown. So, it would have to be a big signing that would say to me, Mike Brown gave, way more control to this guy. You know what I'm saying? Because if he brings in anybody else, I really feel like it'll regress in how much he gives, to somebody who isn't named Marvin Lewis. So, if it was a big name like we were talking to Jim Harbaugh or Urban Meyer, even though I'm kind of iffy about that because of the PR storm that he's been going into, I really don't think we need that. But if we do, at least I know, hey, that guy, he's coming in, he got some power. That's the only way that you're going to draw a guy in like that, more so than the money, just the control. So.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks, Aaron. We're going to take these questions off the air. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Call again for sure. John, a lot there. And we got a couple of calls that we couldn't get to, but if you want to call back, we'll try and get you on the air. We do have an open line now. But, John, the one I want to talk about, and he stopped short of saying it, but Andy Dalton is a tease. Right? I mean, for lack of a better word, Andy Dalton is a guy, think about this year, he had numerous comeback wins. He also he set franchise records, but like he said, he's a guy you maybe want 2-3 years, and it's kind of the Alex Smith thing. You start to get sick of him and you want to move on.
Yeah, he's like the ideal bridge quarterback because he's definitely the kind of guy that would take a young quarterback under his wings and kind of get him prepared to eventually take his job. And I think he would handle that role well, but he's exactly right. You know, he's not the quarterback that can elevate your franchise. And I think my big fear with them eventually moving on from him is taking another kind of Andy Dalton because, you know, they've grown comfortable with him and they think that they can find success with him in the long run. They just think they're unlucky in that sense. But I definitely want a transition to, you know, a quarterback that can actually elevate your team and you don't have to build a superstar team around him to eventually, cross the threshold that you're so desperately trying to cross. And Aaron made a lot of good points and all that kind of stuff. But I really, really wish I really wanted to tell him that there's just not going to be a coach that takes away power from Mike Brown as long as Mike Brown is running.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm glad you brought that part up. We've got another call we're going to get to in just a second here, but I'm glad you brought that part up because I thought that was very interesting, and I think that where my wheels turn on that is that I totally agree with you that a new guy coming in is not going to be able to wrestle a lot of power away from Mike Brown.
Not a chance.
But a guy who comes in and is somehow, whether it's with a transcendent quarterback or whatever, if he's able to start winning, you're going to be able to have more say. And that's what happened with Marvin. And I mean, that's really the thing with any business. I mean, think about it. If you're a salesman, right, and you have a sales manager and your sales manager wants you to do stuff a certain way, if you kind of do play by the rules a little bit, but you also have your own game plan and you put up excellent numbers and you have something you want to have done, or you have a strategy you want to implement, or you kind of want to do things your own way, your sales manager's like, well, if you keep putting up the numbers, fine. Right. I mean, if you're not getting us in trouble in terms of legal problems or something, and you're putting up the numbers, all right, man, do it your own way. And I think that that's what it's going to take in terms of wrestling away power from Mike Brown. Yes, you might be able to, once he moves on, whether it's unfortunately with death or passing it along to his family members or what have you, you might get some changes there. But I think no matter who it is, it's going to have to be a coach that rides it out for a year or two under strict guidelines. And then if and when they're able to win, it's going to be like, hey, my way works. My way works. And so let's do things my way. I think that's what Jim Harbaugh tried to do in San Francisco, and he just rubbed people the wrong way. But I think that's what it's going to take to wrestle away some power from Mike Brown. We have another call on the line. I believe it's from our good friend Terrell. Terrell, how are you, sir? I'm doing. We're doing okay. I mean, it's we're 5-7, coming off a pretty ugly loss here, so we're doing all right. But what's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, no, that was some trash they said out.
Yeah, not a very good showing.
But I do want to just say that we Marvin do got to get up out of there. I mean, all his fans and all the preparation and everything to get real stale. And I just want to say that, the defense is looking like they can't tackle it. The two guys, I think that we could try to trade or give value. I think that we got to get rid of Vontaze and also Kirk Patrick. And also, one of the coaches I was going to say was, John already mentioned it, I was clearing that from KC. And you had a good one with those fans. But one of the other coaches I really wanted, but actually he retired. And that's Urban Meyer, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I just want to say that. And also, a little debate kind of thing I was thinking about. Leon Hall, John Kujosa, Pac-Man Jones versus Bernard, Kirkpatrick, and Jackson, like, who you
think will win? Ooh, that's a good call there. Thanks, Terrell. Appreciate you calling in as always. We'll take that question off the air. A lot there that he talked about. We'll get to his little question at the end there. I thought that was a really good one. The thing that I don't know how much value the Bengals will get if they try and trade Perfect and Kirkpatrick. I don't know that there's much there. Yeah, I don't think there's just much value there. I think between salaries and baggage and all that stuff, I don't think there's much there to get. But Hall, Joseph, and Pac-Man versus Denard, Jackson, and Kirkpatrick. I'm going to go with the former. I think. And unfortunately, the Bengals didn't get to keep Joseph all that long. They basically got him for his rookie deal, and that was it. But he and Hall were a good tandem. And then, you know, they played with I think they were able to play with Jones for at least the three of them played together for 1 year or 2 years, I believe. But I think that trio, even though the other trio are a trio of first-round picks as well, I think that Hall, Joseph, and Pac-Man wins out for me. What about you, John?
Oh, yeah, I think easily as well. I think for a decent stretch in time, Hall was the best slot cornerback in the NFL, and I don't think it was relatively close. At least back in the late 2000s, early 2010s, Joseph was amongst the upper echelon of boundary cornerbacks, and he got paid like one when he went to Houston. He was never, I guess, an all-pro at the position, but he was always good enough to contend for the Pro Bowl, and as of right now, obviously Kirkpatrick's not exactly near that. I grew sick and tired of defending Pac-Man as the person, but at least as a player, he had a decent career with the Bengals for sure, and he definitely, you know, was a figure in the locker room that at the very least guys kind of look to for on the field leadership and that kind of stuff. So as your first cornerback, you know, he was He was pretty decent, and up until he fell off the cliff as a player. But yeah, definitely Hall and Joseph, that duo alone, that kind of sells me. Even though Jackson is a very good player, and Kirkpatrick is at least, you know, average at this point in his career.
Yeah, Jonathan Joseph's still doing it. He had an interception last week against Cleveland. Still not the player he was probably at the prime of his career, probably in, you know, 2009 with the Bengals, or 2011, 2012 with the Texans, but still brings it, still playing for him, and, you know, he's had a good little career, mostly with the Texans, but a good chunk of it with the Bengals as well. We're going to get out of here with this last question here. We got to end on a happy note. Sarcasm font. Jeff Andy, does it remind anyone else that this team looks a lot like the 90s teams with a number 28 at the running back position and not much else? Yes. And obviously he's referring to Corey Dillon, 28. And interestingly enough, for those who are on Twitter, Jeremy Conley, if you follow him, he's the guy who dresses up as a Bengals version of Captain Obvious from the hotel. I think it's hotels.com commercials or something like that. He tweeted out a deal that was Corey Dillon's career rushing day the other day, which was, if you haven't seen that, it's pretty incredible, because they had Scott Mitchell at quarterback and nothing else, and yet he still racked up 278 yards on the ground that day, which was crazy.
Yeah.
But yes, yes and no. To me, this is a team that is either vastly underachieving based on the amount of high picks that are out there and all of that, or this is a team that is not doing well in the draft. I think it's actually a little bit of both, because certain high picks aren't playing for them, or not playing well, or have taken a step back this year. So I think there is more talent, overall talent, on this team. I think it's underachieving, but there are some similarities. Your take, John.
It's hard for a talented running back like Mixon to not do well, regardless of what his surroundings is. As long as the blocking's decent, like, there's only so much that bad coaching can do to negatively affect a good running back like Mixon. And that's kind of like the same thing that was with Dillon when he had just Willie Anderson in front, but no one else on that entire team that was talented. The Bengals just handed the ball off to him 20, 30 times a game, and he ended up accumulating a crap ton of yards because of it. And it's kind of the same nature that could be with Mixon if they feed Mixon the ball, which they don't do, because Bill Lazor historically doesn't do that as a play caller. But yeah, to your point, there is significantly more talent when you compare the two rosters, because there is actually talented players. But as you said, most of the issues stem from coaching. Either not elevating those talented players to what they could be, and definitely not getting the depth ready to play at all, and just a severe lack of depth in important areas that obviously injuries have affected and have caused this roster to look pretty freaking bare at this point with all the injuries that have come about. So yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat with you. Yes, that look like the brightest spot, but there's a reason for that. It's because he's a running back. There's only so much that a lack of coaching can negatively do to affect that.
Yeah, and, you know, Corey Dillon, I'm looking up his stats. Corey Dillon is basically he had basically 20 carries a game, and Mixon is far below that. We've got one last call here, John. I'm gonna get to it, and then we will get out of here. So let me grab this. Hi, it's the Orange and Black Insider. Who's this?
Hey, it's John from Kentucky.
John, what's going on, buddy? You're the last call of the night. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I just want to thank you and John both for doing this podcast each week, because I'm sure it's getting to where it's hard to talk about the Bengals sometimes, you know? So I do appreciate you all doing this.
Nah, thanks, buddy.
I mean that seriously. And you did mention earlier, Anthony, that maybe if the Bengals win their last few games or something, they'll bring Marvin back. Well, I don't think the Bengals win their last few games. I think it's Cleveland and Pittsburgh. I don't see them winning either one of those games, whether they bring Marvin back or not. I don't think I'll be surprised either way, if he's not back or if he is back. So, I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words, John. Always appreciate it, and always appreciate you calling in. Basically, to me, the only winnable game, obviously, of the four remaining seems to be Oakland. And boy, might that one be just ugly to watch in terms of what the product on the field will be for both of those teams. You know, I think if this was a team that maybe had Dalton or not both, but Dalton or Green, I think they would have a shot at maybe, you know, winning another game or kind of making a run at an 8-8 now at this point. But I think I don't know. I just don't really see a win there. And I think that if Marvin is going to pull out wins and he somehow gets a win against Cleveland and or Pittsburgh, that will definitely open ownership's eyes for better or for worse. In terms of fan perspective, that will open ownership's eyes and say, you know, obviously Marvin finished the season with these two wins. John Sheeran, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think
thanks, John.
Yeah, definitely.
I think six wins is the number that we're likely going to see, and it's probably going to be that win against Oakland, because as bad as the Bengals are, the Oakland are just that much worse, and they're playing at home in front of probably 30,000 people coming to that game. So yeah, I don't see them winning those two games either, because they're playing with a disadvantage in the most important areas, you know, coaching and quarterback. And again, like we talked about, it'll just be an impossible sell for the team to possibly market this team with Marvin Lewis again leading the team, and especially after, you know, at that point, what would it be like losing six out of the final eight games at that point? Yeah. It presumably, if they win against Oakland, two straight division losses to close out the year, it would just be it would be an impossible task for them to do to try to spin that into a positive. And, you know, but again, this is the Bengals, and Marvin Lewis and Mike Brown are inseparable until they are separated. So we can't, it's just impossible to assume that it's actually going to happen until it actually happens. So I think I'm right with John from Kentucky. I would be equally, you know, I would be equally surprised both ways, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a shame. It really is, because even when the Bengals were, you know, in this 1-3 stretch, 1-4 stretch, I mean, there were still, Cleveland's a winnable game. Denver should be a winnable game both at home. You've got another game against Cleveland, should be a winnable game. You've got Oakland. I mean, even if it was you're in the playoffs as a charlatan type of 9 or 10 win team, there was still an opportunity for this team to do something, even with the injuries and all that kind of stuff. I mean, these are games that, these are not formidable teams, most of them in this stretch of games. And I mean, they are looking completely overmatched. And some of that has to do with the injuries for sure, but they're looking completely overmatched. They're two touchdown dogs this week against the Chargers. You know, they lost by 14 against Denver. It's just going back to the previous question, it does feel there is a 1990s stench about what's happening, and it's weird because this team just completely hit a brick wall this year. That Steelers loss just made them completely hit a brick wall, and it's kind of been a tale of two seasons. It's really a shame, and it's gonna take a lot of changes for internally for this team to turn the corner again next year. But we'll see if that happens. Thanks so much for all of your calls. We had a number of calls. We missed some. I apologize. We couldn't get to all of them, and I apologize to our callers that we couldn't talk to you for longer periods of time. We'd love to just talk to you for hours and hours about the Bengals if we could, but time is not on our side, as they say. But you can get this show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, Art19, and CincyJungle.com. We appreciate the support, and subscribe to those channels if you can. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at BengalsOBI. We appreciate all the interaction in the live YouTube chat tonight. And if anyone's in Los Angeles this week, I will be at the game. I'll be there watching the Bengals hopefully cover a 14-point spread. And I guess that is my final thought. So if anybody's going to the game, let me know, and I'll try and meet up with you, whether it's at the tailgate or inside the game or whatever. But I would love to see or meet listeners of this show, readers of Cincy Jungle both, or just fellow Bengals fans in general. Would love to see and meet some of you. So if you are going to that game, please let me know, and we'll try and meet up. I guess that's my final thought this week, John. Yours?
Yeah, I already told Anthony this, but I don't think he's going to listen to me. If you do see Anthony at the game, make sure to give him like a Chargers jersey so he kind of fits the team. I unfortunately can't be there. I'm about 3,000 miles away, and I don't have the money for a Chargers jersey. But I know we got some loyal fans out there, maybe in the LA area. Help him out. Don't let him show up in the game in the Bengals jersey.
One of my good friends is a big Chargers guy. He's got season tickets.
He's got
it. Yeah, so we're probably going to meet up with him, and yeah, he's going to give me the business, I'm sure. But that's all right. It happens. We'll have some fun regardless. It probably won't be the most fun game to watch, but we get to see him in person for the first time this year, and I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they'll make a game of it. That's going to do it for us this week. You can still get in touch with us on the various platforms that you can download the show, and on Twitter, we still got that poll running for the head coaching options in 2019. If you want to comment or vote on that, please do. For John Sheeran, I'm Anthony Cazenza. Keep your chins up. Better times are coming, I hope. This is the Georgia Black Insider Bengals podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.